What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, October 9th, 2023, and this week's episode, Future Shrouds Bellator 300. We will be talking about Bellator 300, three title fights, a lot of drama in between. We'll talk about UFC Vegas 80. Grant Dawson and Bobby Green has quite the exciting finish, but it's not how people expected. And we'll talk about the latest in MMA news, Conor McGregor, Derek Brunson, and a whole lot of boxing and Dylan Danis in the mix. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Good morning, Double G. I hope you're doing well and have recovered from your trip to sunny San Diego. Was it sunny, or what was the weather like down there?
I'm not gonna lie, it was it's clearly fall in San Diego. It was warm, but then in the evening I needed my hoodie because I'm a punk like that. at 70 degrees, but no, it was very good. And the vibe is always nice in San Diego. You get to media day, you get to this stuff, and you see all the boats in the marina. It was a nice trip.
Nice.
Quick but nice. We got a lot to talk about. I'd like to get right into it. Cool. So we'll talk about the 300 of it all at the end of it. To talk about the fights, though, Usman Nurmagomedov, Brent Primus, Grand Prix semifinal. I believe Usman fought in March. So it's been a minute. And we talked about this. Like, the Grand Prix fighters are just off schedule. Now they are more or less back on. Next month, Patricky fights Alexander for the other semifinal. So we are a little bit more squared away again. That being said, this fight, five-rounder. To be honest, strong start by Brent. I thought that the first couple rounds were actually pretty competitive and close. Then it just seemed like Brent stopped being able to figure out the range and the speed of Usman. I felt like, you know, there was a lot of pick and pop, a lot of neutralizing of each other's offense. No one is trying to get, you know, they're trying to not get out of position, trying to go for the finish, and they're trying to implement some things. And credit to the level and the abilities of both men. I think that's what made this fight not the barn burner people probably wanted. I thought that Usman's just length and his ability to use that just really carried him through that fight. Brent was never out of it, but I think he also just struggled to close that distance and mount significant offense for periods of time, and that's really what gave Usman Nurmagomedov the fight. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was ultimately easy work for Usman. It's, you know, not that there wasn't, as you say, you know, a good showing by Brent Primus, especially at the onset, but you know that wrestling is just very challenging. We've seen it time and time again. And the strangest thing to me is looking at the difference between their two physiques. Like, Brent Primus has the physique of not even a Ken doll. I mean, he's better sculpted than that. And Usman looks like a dude just walking down the street that someone pulled in to a fight. Like, it's just crazy how they're totally, you know, physiologically different, but because of that upbringing of just that constant, you know, Khabib style wrestling, whatever it is, wrestling bears, whatever actually happens in Dagestan that makes them such amazing wrestlers, it's crazy, man. So, you know, just on paper, looking at the pictures, looking at them in the cage, it doesn't seem like it should be what it turned out to be. But like I said, Usman ultimately did what Nurmagomedovs do, and just consistent, repetitive takedowns, pressure, you know, the strength that he has in his feet and his toes to just sort of be on his toes and hinged upward, like putting downward pressure on Primus. It's crazy what they can do with their bodies, and it's like they have tiny little muscles, every mega muscles everywhere, right? So I'm not surprised by the outcome. I didn't really expect it to be, you know, an all-out war. I expected Usman to have the upper hand most of the time, so it was what I figured. But, you know, Brent Primus has managed to stay in the top you know, five of Bellator lightweight division for, I mean, since he got his shot with Michael Chandler back in the day. And so that's probably because all the Bellator divisions are pretty like thin, right? Like there's a few names at the top and then everyone else is kind of like, we don't know who they are. So Brent Primus is one of those names that's still been hanging out the top. I don't know what the future holds for him, but obviously Usman's, you know, on the upswing for sure.
Yeah, I think that there's still a spot for Brent in Bellator. I think it's now about what kind of stuff do you mount in this next 2 years or so before we find out what's the future. And look, maybe that is another chapter. Ironically, and I was doing my research for it, you know that Brent was older than Michael Chandler when they fought several years ago?
Wow.
And I know. I get it. Like, he's a very, look, whatever he's doing, it's working for him. He doesn't, you know, look his age. But, yeah, and I was like, I think people forget this is a guy who got off to a great start, but he's already, you know, quote, not a spring chicken. Yeah. That's not to say, look, like you said, I mean, the dude's physique at lightweight, I mean, the dude doesn't have, he's probably in like that 2% body fat, looked in fantastic shape. Usman may be the, look, there could be a conversation in like 2 or 3 years, Usman might be right there, Islam Khabib level. He's on a great run right now, he's got nothing but time. It's like he is in his prime years earlier, and he's in a great just moment. You know, you have one more fight, you win a Grand Prix, the potential of the Bellator PFL of it all very soon. He's in a great spot for a non-UFC fighter. And then that's not to say if his contract expires, not ESPN, UFC most likely will be in the game for him. He's managed by Ali Abdelaziz. You know they would love to have the superpowers there under one banner. It just creates for a lot. Islam wants to move up. Usman could stay at 55. It's just like, what more do we need, people?
Yep.
So, great spot for him. He fights the winner of Patricio Pitbull and Alexander Shubley, who fight November 11th. And so, assuming the Grand Prix final will be one of the bigger events left on the Bellator schedule next year. Once again, we'll talk about the future of Bellator after. Chris Cyborg makes quick work of Kat Zingano. You know what? Physicality. Like, her all-around game, like, I think most people said, unless she looks, I'll just say bluntly, old, you know, overnight, because let's be real, when you've had a long career like that, it just feels like it's going to happen one night, and that's just it, right? Chris Cyborg is not there yet. She looked great, just overpowered Kat, outmaneuvered Kat. Kat Zingano really struggling to get it going, and just Cyborg catches her, goes down, vicious ground and pound, gets the first round finish. What were your thoughts?
Man, it was a bummer because, you know, I wasn't expecting to see prime Zingano, but I think we still expected a more of a fight. I certainly didn't expect it to be finished in the first round. You know, Kat has been very open about her medical issues over the years that she had, like, you know, brain fog and the implants thing. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that she, you know, very strongly felt was the reason for her inability to move the way she wanted to in the sport, you know, in a fight. So I just expected a little bit more from her. But is it that, you know, she's 41 and she's, you know, her prime is way past her, which, okay, fine. But they're both older. They're both veterans of the sport. You know, is it that Zingano was never going to be able to beat Cyborg no matter what, you know, year you put them together? Is Cyborg just that much better? Or was I don't know, man. But I was disappointed that there wasn't enough competition. I was looking for more. But, you know, great win for Cyborg. It looks really good on the resume. Kat Zingano, like we said before, was the last of the, you know, the old school female legendary fighters. You know, I heard Brian Campbell say she was like the last of the Mohicans, you know, from that era. Yeah. So it's a fine win for Chris Cyborg. Like, if I'm her, I'm like, yeah, man, I got everybody. What more? You know, okay, Nunes beat me, but, you know, she was younger. I got everybody from my era. and then some. So for Zingano, though, I'm like, what the heck does she do now? Like, it's just been, when I think about her life, like, even going back to her family life with her husband, I mean, doesn't it just feel, and then the Halle Berry thing, it just feels like it's nothing but bad luck. It's just always terrible things happening, and I shouldn't put that on her because maybe she views her life differently, but from the outside looking in, it seems like it's just wah wah all the time, man, and I feel bad for her. That being said, with Bellator's future in flux, I think that really makes Zingano's future in MMA kind of bleak. You know, whenever 301 is, I can't remember, like, she's not going to be ready to fight then. And so...
Well, they're going to have events next year. Now, mind you, how loaded are they compared to this year? That is the question, but... If she wants another one, she'll have a Bellator opportunity next year, I'm sure.
All right. I mean, maybe, you know, her and McMahon, Sarah McMahon, like, you know, I'd see that. So
I like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to write her obituary here, but
I'm not gonna lie. That was a pretty full page spread.
No, man, because I just feel so. It's coming from a place of like empathy. Like, I feel so bad for her.
So respectfully to that, and I don't want to pile on. It does feel like the business, she became one of those who got screwed by the business, right? And the way this played out, and also physically, like all of this with the 35 to 45. I know her first few fights at 45, like in Bellator, I remember, I'll be honest, I felt like they gave her a really easy one, mm-hmm. all things considered, and she almost lost that one for a minute. Now, mind you, look, at the end of the day, you win. But I remember it's like, Kat, are you about to lose this? And it's like, we're talking about you fighting Chris Cyborg and this and that. And then you talk about the movie stuff and the legal stuff. And we know her history. I know ESPN, the magazine, had just raw, very revealing article about her life, like around the Ronda fight leading up to it.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is very true. But yeah, these last couple of years where it's like, what do we need to make the Cyborg fight happen? Why hasn't it happened yet? And it plays out like that. I get it. I like the Sarah McMahon matchup. I think that, look, Kat Zingano, this was always kind of like it, right? I think that there's this feeling like if you could get this done, you maybe can set up a little bit. Obviously, the PFL of it all, potentially. But without it, it felt like the narrative was going to shift. And now the narrative is where it is. If she's trying to work her way back up, is it just about the love of the game? When she talks about it, we'll know more. But for sure, this is a tough one for her, undoubtedly. For Chris Cyborg, look, Leah McCourt beat Sarah McMahon first round. I thought she looked fantastic. Younger, a lot less tread on the tires, a lot less miles on the car. Feels like, okay, is this the new guard, old guard? Of course. Going back to it, it's a good fight, yeah. We said if Cyborg beats Zingano, that's kind of it. And with full respect to McCourt, Sarah McMahon wasn't really building this big wave of momentum coming from UFC to Bellator. So it didn't feel like, that would be the one that she didn't get, the fight with Sarah McMahon. I didn't feel that way. Leah McCourt, she was coming off a loss to Zingano, so it didn't feel like you are missing something right there, right this moment either. Now, Leah, the assertiveness of that fight, I will say it does give me some interest. I think that Leah's been a top prospect for a long time. That being said now, for Chris Cyborg, if you stay, there's Leah. There's Sarah Collins, who's now beating some of the vets, but still young in her career. And then there's just, okay, do you want to box? Do you want to call it a day? Because, you know, God bless, like you said, she's done it all. Is the PFL of it all really interesting? Larissa Pacheco, Kayla Harrison. I mean, I'm sure if the money's right, she's going to entertain it, but... Now it just becomes, at what point do you feel like it's time to call it? if there's another three fights in you to fight the Larissa, Leah, and Kayla, I'm here for it. Because after she looked on Saturday, having had COVID like middle of the month last month.
Oh, I mean, didn't know that. Wow.
Oh yeah, she revealed it. And I was like, bro, you know, you clearly still got it to compete at that level. But if you decide, you know, I love fighting for Scott Coker, I don't really want to start a new relationship with everyone over there with respect, then maybe it's just time to say you did it all. It's always going to be 1A, 1B, you and Amanda, and you've got more fights on the record. And that's just it.
Man, you know what? I that's totally acceptable, and no one would knock her for it. However, I'm thinking, if she really does have more fights in her, which appeared to, you know, be the case on Saturday, I would be like, how soon is this supposed merger going to happen? Because if she could get in there and fight and Pacheco and get, well, I mean, you know, Harrison's got the rematch first, but I mean, look, let's just imagine a future where Chris Cyborg actually beats whoever the champion is at PFL when she gets there, you know, assuming there's a merger. That would make her be, what, Strikeforce champ, UFC champ, Bellator champ, and then PFL champ? Like, nobody, male or female, would have done that. And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know what? For Chris, and I know someone brought it up specifically in that context. Yeah, you know, once again, if she wants it, she is there, but she's been champion everywhere she went. And I have a little bit of this, you know, I'm going to call it right down the middle. I like Chris. Chris has been great with me. Her partner / manager, Ray, is good with me. There are times when I see the Grand Slam champ thing being thrown out there. I like tennis. I watch tennis. So just to understand, when you say you're a Grand Slam champion, it kind of makes it sound like you hold all of them at the same time. Grand Slam champion does technically just mean that you won all four slams, which is, there's four majors, US, Wimbledon, French Open, and Australia. Because of the context where it's like, well, you weren't champion at UFC when you left, and you know, she kind of makes it sound like I'm the only one, and it's like, in my mind, it's like, there's a lot of, context we need to add to this, but okay. She is undoubtedly, you know, right up there. And I've said it, I'm going to keep saying it. I'm probably going to be that guy at 80 who says it. If you run it back with Amanda Nunes, even if Amanda wins, it doesn't end in one round.
That's right.
I have always believed that. They are so good that I think Amanda had the night of her life to get Chris the way she did. I just don't see another way with it, if that makes sense. So I just have always felt that way. Obviously, Chris's career is going to have a great chapter, but I think that's going to be the big elephant in the room always, is that like, well, you did all this. It's like, yeah, but you couldn't beat Amanda, and Amanda was this and that. And promotion has something to, it's always a big part of it. I mean, the UFC brand is just so big that when they tell you this girl is the best and she's beaten you already, it's hard to change the minds of the fans who don't watch Bellator every week, who don't watch PFL, you know? But always it's going to be there. So she just has that, you know? And I think that that's unfortunate, because I know how good Cyborg is. I think there's just been sometimes like this delivery, like sometimes she wants to push it. Sometimes I feel like Cyborg may be asking for the flowers just a little bit. She deserves them. She definitely does. But then sometimes I feel like we get caught in this whole business of it all, that we just forget to say, let just keep whooping butt. We all know how great you are, and you're always going to be, you know?
Yeah. So, okay.
That's how I feel about it. Okay. And look, maybe some that's just trying to fight that wave of, you know, every time UFC retweets the Cyborg loss to Amanda. I don't know. I can imagine it's a real thing. Come on.
Yeah.
Finally, Liz Carmouche, Lima Leigh McFarlane. I'll be honest, she was she was just cashing in those checks with leg kicks. I mean, I thought that I asked some of the people, it's like, I'm sorry, is she slipping or is she actually already hurt on that knee? Turns out that that happened. I'm not going to say who, but I did say to them, it's like, does the corner throw in the towel here, save Alima's knee before the fifth round? Yeah. And I'll be honest, I was trying to get some stuff done. I kind of lost track. Oh, wait, we're in the going to the fifth, not the fourth. Opening of the fifth, final kick, just, you know, that's it. The knee bends backward. That's it for Alima's knee. No more is said to be done. I thought Alima didn't look too bad. I thought she looked quite bluntly the younger, faster fighter. Mm-hmm. I think that Liz's whole strategy was clearly pick and pop and make it work. I actually was shocked, if anything, less grappling.
Yeah.
And then she neutralized the grappling of Alima, never entertained it for a minute. And it's like, okay, you know, Liz Carmouche, and I did say it to her after the fight, I mean, you know, you were a veteran when she was getting started first day at, you know, 10th Planet San Diego. And here she was, your protege in a title fight. And quite bluntly, you freaking handled it again. And just so impressive. We'll talk about the future, but let me just toss it to you. What do you think about the fight?
Yeah, man, I definitely expected more grapple heavy. Like, I thought it was going to be a grappling match pretty much. So I was not expecting that. But, we know Liz Carmouche is just strategic, savvy, veteran. And, I mean, to say you know your opponent well is an understatement, right? So they both know each other so well. I'm going to say this and preface it with, I'm not taking anything away from Carmouche's win, but, you know, I'm sure Ali Malay was, how do I put this? Like, you saw how Max Holloway was affected when he fought right by the Maui fires. And, you know, Ali Malay was on, you know, social media from day one. I think that's probably a deep, like, wound that we can't hear as mainlanders, comprehend and feel it the way that they're feeling it. So I got to believe that had something to do with missing weight, you know, just not being able to commit fully to all the things you need to do for your training camp. So going into the championship fight, you know, missing weight, so not being able to, you know, not being eligible for the belt, like, man, that stuff's got to mess with you. That being said, you know, it was still competitive. Even though I'm adding all these mental roadblocks into Alima Lay's mind, she'll have to tell us for sure if that's the case. But it's hard for me to imagine there wasn't this mental block. So in any case, you know, the fight wasn't what I wanted it to be. You know, when we were talking about this for months leading up to it actually being booked, it's like, yeah, let's do it. They want to fight each other, and, like, you know, the energy behind it just wasn't the same. I thought it was going to be just more fun, you know, but, you know, a fight's a fight, right? So it can't be fun, but it just didn't live up to the hype. But, you know, the better fighter won, and it's Carmouche. I don't know, man, it sounded bad. When the ref just calls the fight because you're on your back grimacing in pain, like, he didn't even give her a chance to nothing, right? I mean, it was already, as you said, you wanted the towel to get thrown in, or you were thinking maybe it could be. So, you know, fight's called immediately, and that's it. A bit underwhelming, but I don't know what the future holds. Like, there's so many things up in the air, because I'd like to see a rematch under better circumstances, you know, for Alima Lay, and just so she can have a better shot at it. But this injury, who knows what it's going to be, what kind of a delay it's going to cause, and then, of course, the future of Bellator. Is she going to want to be a PFL fighter if Bellator does get absorbed? I mean, you know, there's a lot to consider way down the line if we want to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, yeah, I mean, earlier this year, Alima said this fight was going to be the last one. She said this week that, you know what, I know I said that, but now I'm feeling good, and it's like, it's just not time. And then the weight, and now the injury, and it's like, I mean, I'm only human. I can imagine that I would also start to reconsider my previous stance.
Yeah.
and then, yeah, the future of it all. I know Liz said she would like to see her have one more go out on her terms. I mean, no one wants to go out on an injury like that. I mean, even if it's like, man, let me just throw down and I take an L, but don't make me just, yeah, that's how it ended. My BFF blew out my knee and I just decided, man. I mean, I get it.
Fold? I don't know.
I get it. I will say full credit to Liz. I mean, she was in her full Cobra Kai, no mercy, Karate Kid mentality. I was,
Yeah, man,
dang.
I was surprised by that. You know, she ended up just saying, "You're my opponent, and I'm gonna do what I would do to any opponent." It was almost like a matter of respect, right? I'm not gonna take it easy on you. But man,
We've seen it. If you're not of that age, you've seen the GIF. If you are of that age, you've seen the movie No Mercy.
no
You
mercy,
know,
no
just,
mercy.
it
Yeah.
was cold. Sweep the leg. Sweep the leg, Johnny Lawrence. Anyway, Liz did entertain a rematch with Kana Watanabe. She wanted it to be in Japan. Felt like the Japanese connection, the fact that I want to say she was born or at least grew up in Okinawa. You know what? Look, if we're just going, like, hey, do give everyone what they want, I mean, let her have it. I did get the impression, I mean, Liz said she wants a women's 135. Said that, PFL and all this said, well, PFL doesn't have a 25. Said, I want a 35. That's the goal she wants. So I think a part of me feels like that's what she wants to pursue at this stage of it all. I mean, it's one of those things. I think the UFC chapter is done. I don't entertain any thoughts about her going back to that. That being said, it's like, okay, it's like, are you just, once again, are you done when you say you're done? Like Clay Guida, just Father Time every year just forgets to check in on Clay Guida, you know? If
That's
that's what it's
hilarious.
about, then let her keep fighting. And, if it's Kana and a Ryzen, Bellator card, let's go. If it's some of the new kids, let's go. If it's this or that, I mean, just let her have it. If this is where we're at, because I don't know that. I mean, this is her protege, and she's still freaking at this level of the game. I
Yeah.
mean, what more do you need to see from her? Look, the UFC thing ended how it ended, and we move on. It's kind of like Chris Cyborg. I don't ever see Chris fighting for the UFC again. I don't ever see her fighting Amanda Nunes again. But we move on, and it's like, let's evaluate it for what it is, the whole picture, not just the one that got away. You know what I mean? So that's how I feel about Liz. Let's talk about the Bellator of it all. Did it feel okay? Bellator 300, it's big, gold gloves on a bunch of people. The 300 branding, like their poster was actually different this year. It was different for this event, and you know how I feel about it.
I
They never
know,
have a
yeah.
different poster. Did it feel different? Did it feel big or special? You tell me.
Yeah, man, a little bit. I feel like more in theory it felt special. The gold gloves were a nice touch. I prefer that over the gold canvas, like the UFC 200 gold canvas, which wasn't even really gold. It was like this very weird yellow. So I like the gold gloves. It seemed like the fighters felt the energy was different. But you can't think about UFC three, I'm sorry, Bellator 300 without acknowledging the elephant in the room, which is how close to the end is this? And that's sort of like a little dark cloud in the corner that was there the whole time. So, I think the fights didn't help. They were fine fights, but not like thrilling, exciting. Nothing amazing happened, right? I'm not knocking the performances, meaning like they were fine performances, but when it's a big event like this is a huge milestone for Bellator on the precipice of possibly being absorbed into another promotion. Like you want everyone to come out and really swing for the fences. So all in all, I would say, it was like a B. I'll give that a grade, a B. I expected more. But yeah, it didn't quite live up to it. What about for you? You were there, so what did it feel like there?
Gotta say it how it is.
Okay.
It felt like you were at a business that was celebrating a 10-year anniversary, but there was this big sign on the window that says, going at, you're celebrating your 10-year, but there's a sign over the door that says going out of business.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, we made it 10 years, and it's like, yeah, but we're closing next month.
Yep.
So that's what it felt like. It was the question. Everyone, I don't know that we. I get it because it's part of the job. I don't know that there was one fighter that was not asked about the future of Bellator and
Right.
PFL. Scott Coker didn't say nothing. I don't think he wanted to say anything, as much as nothing was probably there to report.
It's crazy.
I'll say what it is. It did feel like the best of Bellator. And let me explain what I mean by that. When I look at, for example, at the beginning of the show in the first prelim, if you guys didn't catch it, I believe Josh Hokett, former NFL player, acknowledging that his NFL career is over, comes in, makes his pro debut at Bellator 300, gets a win. It's great. Clearly a guy being developed from the ground up at 0-0. Similar to AJ McKee. Similar almost to Elimelech. Sumiko Inaba. This is just like, okay, we're still doing this. This is such a great opportunity for these young guys who maybe you're not getting the UFC love, but there's still a place for you and opportunities for you to shine. In that way, it's great. When you look at the opportunities that Liz Carmouche has gotten to have and got to have again on Saturday for Chris Cyborg and these veterans, Sarah McMahon, Kat Zingano, it's really a beautiful thing. You got to look at it objectively. You still got, gas in the tank, and you have a platform and a place that'll pay you like the veteran you are, and to have good fights and all that. That is a beautiful thing for Bellator. All of that, is really relevant. Then there's the other stuff. Nothing Bellator did was going to change the fact that Linton Vassell got sick and you lost a title fight. And then, the fights play out the way they're going to play out. I can't tell you that Usman had the most rousing performance. I can't tell you that the Kat Zingano thing and Cyborg felt anticlimactic. That is what it is. They're not in control of that. But when we talk about this, oh, you hope it pops off on a night like 300. And I'll tell you that I thought that outside of the Corrales Kaikamaka fight, if you caught it, the Liam McCourt finish to Sarah McMahon was probably the highlight of the night. That's the one where I think a lot of people, you expected Sarah with the wrestling, just takes down this tall girl, and instead Leah, just shifts the whole narrative. And it was great. I just, once again, there was so much stuff to like about it. And yet it's this elephant in the room. It just felt like it took the fun out of it. I get why Scott Coker didn't want to talk about it. It took the fun out of it. And now we talk about the future. I don't want to rehash it because it's a whole segment like every couple weeks. But do these people get absorbed into the PFL? Do the stars get absorbed next year and then the whole thing shuts down in 2025? Beginning of 2026? I don't know. Obviously, if the stars are taken out of Bellator, you now gotta ask, well, what are we still doing with Bellator? If they don't, then I have the question, what is PFL spending their money on if you're not having the Bellator guys fight the PFL guys? All of these are completely legitimate questions that we have zero answers to. But yeah, in that way, I think about, well, what do I want to see from Bellator? I saw a lot of effort. Was it enough? Did I feel like the fans had that pop like I've seen at the forum and other places? I didn't. And I think in large part because you felt like, once again, it just felt like the going out of business sign was just so overbearing. It took all the fun out of all the work you've done for the last several years, right? So I don't really know what else. How did we get to this point? I'm gonna leave that for another day, but yeah, that was just my feeling. There was a lot to enjoy from it, but it just felt like that just hung over everything and it took the fun out of it. And it's through no fault of their own, that's just where they are at. Look, like I said, good night of fights. UFC did run head to head. Grant Dawson, Bobby Green. The King only needed 33 seconds to stop Grant Dawson, who hadn't lost since I think they said 2019 or 2016. I'm not gonna act like they weren't still in the feeling out process. They clearly were. At least Grant Dawson was. Bobby Green clearly was a couple minutes ahead of him, and I think that's why he got the finish. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, man, it was unexpected. I mean, I'm pretty sure we both picked Dawson. I think I picked him by decision at least.
Everyone picked Dawson. It was like a Dawson, right? over 1,000 favorite.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So, I mean, yeah, man, it was a big win for unranked Bobby Green. And, like, you know, first he thanks the Lord, and then he really wanted to bring his dogs into the cage. And, like, DC's talking to him like the way I talk to my son when he's about to, like, spill yogurt on the sofa, or he decides he wants to carry his, you know, cup full of chocolate milk across the living room. And I'm like, no, 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 don't do it. Don't do it. You can't do it. You can't. And that's what DC is saying to this guy. He's like, man, you can't bring your dogs in here. I don't think you can do it. I mean, like, the great victory that he had, a knockout, like, something that Bellator 300 didn't have was a great knockout like that. And, like, the man's, like, wants his dog. So that just kind of cracked me up. It was a funny moment, not to take away from the actual victory, but, you know, unexpected. What does it really do for Bobby Green? I don't know. Is it just like, you know, every fighter gets a big knockout, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're the next guy to watch out, you know, like, look out, here comes Bobby Green. Doesn't necessarily mean that, but, you know, he was patient, doing his thing with his hands down, and he saw an easy opening and took it. You know, that's something that you got to give the man a lot of credit for. So I'm curious where they put him now. You know, I don't know, like, was he completely, he wasn't even ranked in the top 15, right? He was completely unranked.
Yeah, you know, so I think the easiest one depends where he decides he wants to go from there. I know that he and Dan Hooker essentially verbally agreed on Twitter to a fight. Renato Moicano wanted it, and Bobby Green threw the bucket of water on that, to say the least. Mm-hmm. You know, swag and confidence is a very underrated thing, because you feel like everyone has it even if they're losing. Bobby Green is kind of milking it for everything, and I think that's exactly what he should be doing. Do I think that Islam Makhachev saw that and is like, oh man, a rematch with him would be really hard? No.
Yeah.
Let's keep it in check now. That being said, look, he's a fun guy. I want to watch him fight. Good, you know, highly ranked, unranked, just another guy who wants to bang. I want to see him fight. It's kind of like Chito Vera. It's like, well, maybe it'll look good, maybe it won't, but you want to watch. That kid Medina off Contender Series, Dana White essentially signed him because he made it entertaining. He was taking that L, and he was still getting the crowd into it, the fans into it. That's a Bobby Green. Enjoy it. So I don't have so much, let's talk about the logistics of where he should go, as much as, man, just put him in a fight and we'll watch. He's got a lot more to show me before I say, oh, let's talk about title shots and top fives, top threes. No. But I want to watch him fight. That's all you need to know.
So yeah.
I'll go from there.
That's fair.
Yeah. Look, Joe Pyfer gets it done. Obviously, some of the guys showed out, but Joaquin Buckley. But yeah, the story kind of began and ended with Bobby Green beating Grant Dawson while Bellator 300 was running. So
yeah,
if you didn't tune in, you got some fun stuff at UFC. So enjoy it. Dana White had some stuff to say. First off, because he announced it, I want to get it out of the way. Fighters are allowed to have their flags again.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there was this, he didn't say it, but I guess there was this feeling because of the Russia-Ukraine conflict and several Russian fighters being on the roster. I mean, mm-hmm. More than a good handful. I think there was this feeling that, like, well, you don't want to have the Russian flags too prominent because of the, you know, global tension and all that.
Yeah.
And Dana White said, it's like, you know what, just, if this is where you're from, separate the government from the athletes and just let them rep their home. I thought it would always should be like that. There's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of moments where a lot of countries, United States included, aren't perfect. And that should not change the fact that you have a home and you have your people and your community, and the best and quickest way to represent that is the flag of where you're from.
Yeah.
And I do know there are some flags that hold more connotations than others, but I think that if you're there and you're saying, I'm here, you know, not, this is for everyone back home who supports me and is there for me and is just trying to live their life and do the best they can. I think there's no problem with that and having your flag. So I'm glad that Dana White kind of lifted the ban. I think it was long overdue. But he dropped probably the big news, and Conor did also with his tweet, but I know how seriously we take Conor McGregor tweets. McGregor's back in the USADA testing pool. Yep. Conveniently, 6 months from now is April. You know what else is expected to happen in April? Oh. UFC 300.
Oh, good.
Who could have seen this coming?
Oh. Well, you know, this is where I go back to, like, who was pulling our leg the most? McGregor, UFC, like when he, I mentioned last week, like when he says, like, I just want to fight, this is how I make a living. I believed him that he was chomping at the bit to fight. But now I'm like, okay, why? Now I'm like, no, I think you probably weren't. You're probably just like, I don't want to get off my whatever medicine that I'm taking right now. I don't know, man. I don't know what to make of it. Not because, you know, at this point we already saw it coming, right? Okay, all these big UFC events up until December, and he's and Chandler are not booked. He's not in the testing pool. So, okay, all signs are pointing to 300, but like, why all the charade? Why not just come out with it, you know? But I guess that's the game, right? You keep us on your toes. Keep us on our toes and keep us checking the Twitter feed or the X feed or, you know, whatever the heck it is. And all right, now he's in the testing pool. Okay, finally, let's do this. Like, I don't want to hear any more about the testing pool. I don't want to hear any more about when they're going to fight. Like, just nobody talk until it gets booked for 300, and then we can talk about it again.
Yeah, it's kind of like there can be too much of a tease. You know, at a certain point, it's like, am I getting it today? No. Then it's like, then you could sell, you know, you could peddle the talk to someone else today. I got it yesterday.
Yep.
This does feel more tangible. It feels like, okay, do we finally have it? Yes. Okay, let's stop talking and let's just get it done. Makes sense. If he doesn't fight, he doesn't fight. But right now, here today, as I talk to you, makes sense. Feels like it's there. For my money, it does make me change my stance, because if you ask me on, when did he tweet that? Let's say Friday. If you ask me on Thursday night, what do you think is going to headline UFC 300? I'd say Sean Strickland Adesanya 2.
Yeah.
Okay. This makes that feel like Strickland Adesanya is the backup option. Mind you, we could find out, Conor just wasn't ready, he's gonna fight in May, Adesanya Strickland, and we're like, oh yeah, here we, all this, you know, we just keep talking.
Yep.
But this feels more tangible, I'll say that.
Yeah.
So yeah, always good to see some movement.
Yeah.
Mateusz Gamrot will serve as the backup for Makhachev versus Oliveira. You know what? I appreciate Superman saying he's going to show up as Clark Kent and he'll take off the shirt and, you know, take off the glasses if they need him. At this point, though, I felt I would have been more excited to hear Justin Gaethje did it.
Okay.
And I think that just came down to Gaethje's not interested in cutting weight for no reason. So,
yeah.
Good for Gamrot, but I don't think they're going to need him. What about you?
Yeah, they're not going to need him. These guys are not like you've seen what Oliveira puts himself through to cut weight. Like
they would do a non-title fight before they put in Gamrot.
Yeah,
like they would just do, like, let's say they both miss weight, they just do a catchweight main event.
Yeah, I think you're
right. They wouldn't go like, Gamrot, are you on weight? Makhachev, are you? Just like, no. They just, I don't see it happening. But get that bag if they're paying you, Mateusz.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah, just in case she's like, nah, thanks, no thanks, I don't need that. So, yeah. But Gamrot is in the position where he has to, you know, make those deals. He's the hungry up-and-comer, and like, yeah, you'd be like, yeah, I'm doing it, I'm down. So it makes sense that he raised his hand or accepted the offer, and that's how it rolls.
Yeah, good for him. Keep it rolling.
Yeah.
Derek Brunson, so you remember, he was going to fight Roman Dolidze about a month from now. Fight gets canceled. Roman is headlining against Cannonier on December 2nd, and now Derek Brunson signs with the PFL already scheduled for a fight on November 24th against Ray Cooper, the former welterweight champion.
Awesome.
Ray Cooper moving up to 185. Next year, Derek Brunson will compete at light heavyweight, but on the 24th, let's make it clear, Ray Cooper's the one moving up. They're fighting at 185. It's not clear pay-per-view or non-pay-per-view yet, but I wouldn't be surprised given it's Ray Cooper and it's a name like Derek Brunson. What was your reaction to this?
Yeah, man, that's a really awesome matchup. I don't know what's the official word on what happened with UFC and Derek Brunson. I don't know, but that's a good fight, dude. Like that, you know, Ray Cooper is always one of the names that you want to see and like you tune into for PFL. And this is exciting. I'm actually pumped about this one.
Yeah, I get the feeling that Ray Cooper always wanted to fight at 185. I think that the weight cut at welterweight was getting a little harder for him.
Yeah.
For Derek Brunson, I think that it was just that you felt like the time was done at UFC. I think there's a little bit of a, hey, there's this appeal of big fish, small pond. Maybe the weight cut is a little easier at 205. All those things have to fall into account. Once again, I will say, I don't know that he was the biggest middleweight. But I appreciate, okay, you don't want to cut as much weight at this stage. You're on a bit of a skid. You kind of feel like this could be that last hurrah. Maybe. Go for it.
Yeah.
But, I'm glad. I mean, you know, that fight with Drakus, he beats Drakus. He's probably still right there for a title shot. That was less than a year ago. So I don't want to act like he's, you know, oh, this is the worst time for Derek Brunson.
Yeah.
That being said, it's like, you know, this is the fight itself with Ray Cooper. Let's go. I think they can bang. I think they could grapple. I think it's good. But it's more, what do we have to see from Derek Brunson next year? And I think that's going to be the real, you know, be all end all of it. So I think that'll be interesting. Obviously PFL gets bolstered a lot more. And that's not a bad thing at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
And then that leads to, you probably haven't seen this because it happened right as we started talking. Breaking news. Ooh. I don't have a little jingle like that other podcast, but we do have it. Curtis Blaydes is out of his fight next month with Jelton Almeida. Now fighting the grappling ace, Derek Lewis, all-time knockout leader in Sao Paulo, Brazil. What are your thoughts?
Wow, I'm sorry. Who's fighting Derek Lewis?
Jelton Almeida.
Whoa, okay. Who did he just beat? We just saw
Rosenstrike. Remember in Charlotte.
Holy moly. Okay, Derek Lewis, man. It makes me a little nervous for Derek Lewis. I want him to keep winning. I'm not saying he can't beat, you know, Almeida, but okay, when is this event?
I think it's November 11th.
November
also?
4th. Oh, November 4th, it says here.
Okay.
Woo. Five rounds in Brazil?
I'm always happy to see Derek. Oh, man. Jelton on the ground, though. That is a bad dude.
In Brazil. Yeah.
I mean, props to Derek. Gotta imagine, man. He could have stayed in America. They would have been happy, but full credit to him.
Yeah, it's smart for him. Like, you know, Dana White loves Derek Lewis, right? He said it after the win over, Marcos Rogério de Lima.
Yeah.
And he was like, when he was, Dana White says, when, you know, Derek Lewis was on that skid, like, there was no conversation, you know, should we cut him or anything? Like, he loves the guy. He's put in some amazing, a heck ton of amazing performances on the mic, even better. And this is just going to get you more points with the boss, like more brownie points. So not that that's why Derek Lewis is doing it, but it seems like they just have a relationship where Derek Lewis is like, yeah, I'll show up. I'll do what I can do. You know, sometimes I'll knock him out. Sometimes I won't. But I'm always fun. People always want to see me in the cage. And, you know, Dana White loves anyone who's willing to step in on short notice. So, man, that's a win. That's a triple win, right? Derek Lewis gets the brownie points. UFC gets a big name. And the fans get Derek Lewis in Brazil against Jelton Almeida.
I mean, the easiest way to describe it, Derek Lewis is a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
I think that I think there's a lot of people very much synonymous with the brand. Derek Lewis is kind of like BJ Penn. He could lose like six in a row, and I think Dana would be like, this is your house.
Yeah,
like, this
exactly.
is your home.
Yeah. Exactly.
I feel like Derek Lewis is much the same guy, kind of guy, and he has that kind of job security. Obviously, he's still got to win fights, but you get my point.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's, like I said, in Brazil, Jelton, the run he's on. Remember, outside of Aspinall and Pavlovich, most people would probably say he's right up there to sneak into that picture. Obviously, Spivak losing to Cyril Gaon kind of takes him out of the running a little bit, but that big five, you know, outside of the title fight, but you got Aspinall, Pavlovich, Gaon, Jelton. I mean, you know, Stipe, just like, dude, this is quite the lineup at heavyweight, and it just makes for such a fun moment. So Derek trying to get back in there, I think it's great. I think it's going to make for a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit of drama. MMA's bad boy Dylan Danis is back to box Logan Paul. You know, I'm not going to lie. The amount of time we spent talking about this on Saturday in between fights was really something. It just, something about the pro wrestling circus just brings the teenager out of people. I don't know what it is. Do you think that the lawsuit is going to go through? What's going to happen with the lawsuit? Is there a lawsuit? Is there no lawsuit? Is Dylan going to pull out of the fight because of the lawsuit? Is the lawsuit going to keep Dylan from walking out to the ring because there's a restraining order 500 feet and Nina sitting 499 feet away? I don't know. It just was such a thing, man. Quite bluntly, let's talk about brass tacks. Dylan Danis has been relentless. The reason he got in trouble is because he actually posted some stuff he shouldn't have had access to that was stolen from Nina Agdal, Logan Paul's fiance, and that's led to the lawsuit, on top of the fact that it's just blunt harassment, and I think she's just trying to kind of stem the tide a bit and say, yeah, not, you know, the selfies and my pictures with the fans are one thing, but I want you to understand I am done with you trying to get content that you shouldn't have. Yeah. Private photos that were hacked and taken without her consent. All that stuff is going on. That has gotten Dylan Danis in trouble. But let's be real. To a lot of people, they don't even care that KSI is fighting. They don't care that the guy who beat Jake Paul is fighting KSI. It's about Logan and Dylan, the WWE superstar, against this guy who Khabib Nurmagomedov flew out of the cage like an eagle to attack on the biggest night in MMA history. What do you feel about all this?
It's so wild. And, you know, I don't know what to make of Dylan Danis, because Conor McGregor still defends him. He still considers him a friend. But like Artem Lobov, who, you know, doesn't make a fool of himself on the internet, is like a mortal enemy, right? So, you know, we don't know the full reason for that.
Isn't that something?
I know, it's crazy, right? So I didn't watch all of it. I just saw a few clips of Helwani's interview of Danis. And let me first just say, you know, I like Helwani, but I don't like the way I don't like the way he treats Danis. Like, it's like he finally found someone that he can pick on, and he just goes all in. It bothers me a little bit. I'm a little bit uncomfortable watching it, because it's still, you know, you're still a professional, right? In any case, Danis knows what he's walking into, so they're both probably just playing off each other. This whole hacking email thing is super bizarre. Yeah, the restraining order is ridiculous, because they're going to fight, so what the heck? Is that just a setup to get this guy arrested so you can fight Mike Perry? I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Here's what I want to ask you. Not related to fighting. The baby thing. Do you think he really has a baby?
Yes, yeah. Okay. I think he is a father. I think he just, you know, the thing about it, like, people forget that Nate Diaz has a bunch of kids.
I thought he just had one. Yeah, okay.
I could have sworn he has more than one. But it's like, I get it. It's like, you know, Max Holloway's a dad, freaking Mini Blessed and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not, you know, people, there's a lot of them that kind of keep it out of the public eye for whatever reason, and that's their prerogative. But yeah, Dylan Danis, I know, is a dad. I think that I just think he's like that it's like, oh yeah, out of wedlock and all that. Yeah, bro. It's like, I don't know that it's his longtime girlfriend. I just think it happened, and okay, he's a father.
No, I mean, yeah, I don't.
No worries.
No concern at all about the nature of relationships or anything. Yeah. But like, when he doesn't have a name for the baby, is that he just saying that, or is he just doesn't want to give the name? Because even Helwani's like, you need a name to like take the baby out of the hospital. And it's...
I think that, yes, I'll say that he was trolling.
Okay, because it's just one of those moments where I'm just like,
he is messing with the public. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay,
you know, man, it's a wild thing. He hasn't fought, I think, since Dylan Danis skipped the whole pandemic. He hasn't fought since 2019.
Yeah, how is he even? I don't know how he's even valuable to.
So okay, if you're gonna give him the benefit of the doubt, he completely messed up his knee twice.
Okay.
Said like, you know, most athletes don't even come back from it. It's that level of injury, you know, like. He just had to deal with that. Okay, so that has hurt you. There's obviously the Bellator of it all, and I don't know. Maybe he feels like, is MMA too much after that kind of injury, and that's why the Bellator thing fell apart? Maybe. And then there's... Okay, I'll say this. Whatever Bellator signed him to back in 2019 or whatever, or wherever they had him, I doubt it's as much as what he's making to box Logan Paul.
Yeah.
I think they threw the money at him. I think that he's just getting a flat rate. He's not getting pay-per-view. But man, it's just one of those things. I've said this before, but when our site was first starting out, we had a scrum with Dylan Danis. And I kid you not, for months, anytime we'd have a new comment, like notifications, there was almost always a new one for that Dylan Danis video. In 2019, years after the, or maybe it might have been 17, it was after the Khabib brawl, like his first, he was fighting close to after the Khabib thing. And it's like, he didn't even fight for Conor McGregor. They literally maybe had like one or two little scuffles, but there were so many people between them, there was never a quote fight with him and Khabib.
Yeah.
But man, the fans ate that up. They just did. He elicits a reaction. He does all of this. And it has created quite the thing for, you know, Mr. WWE superstar Logan Paul. And who I've seen box KSI. And he boxed Floyd Mayweather. And it's just like, I'll just say now, on size alone, should get the better of Danis.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on what they... I don't know. But just like... Everything suggests that this jiu-jitsu guy shouldn't be able to get it done against this bigger, younger, less injured, has boxing experience, is rich enough to afford the training guy in Logan. And then that's not even to talk about... I'm sorry, but on paper... I'll say this. I know there's a generation of fans who puts KSI and Jake Paul on the same level. How many combined fights do all of KSI's opponents have? Honestly.
No idea.
Is it less than 10? I'm pretty sure it's less than 10. You know how many fights Anderson Silva has had in striking? Not MMA, just striking. How about Nate Diaz? Well, I guess Nate was making his debut too, but how many fights? And you're telling me you think these guys are on the same level? Yeah. KSI and Jake? There is every reason to suggest Tommy, the Jake Paul vanquisher, should decimate KSI. But people are out there saying this should be a good fight. I think those people don't watch real boxing.
Yeah,
but I hope they enjoy the show. Have a good time. So yeah, that's how I feel about all this. It's just like, I don't know. I didn't get a chance. I want to ask Scott Coker, if Dylan Danis wins, is this considered a W for Bellator? But
I don't think so.
It should, but it won't be. But it should. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, man. Super bizarre.
Let's top it off. This Saturday from the Apex, Sadiq Youssef taking on Edson Barbosa. If you don't know who Barbosa is, do yourself a favor. Go on YouTube. You'll have a good time, I promise.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. One of the best highlight reels around.
Ever, right? And yeah. Then Sadiq, younger prospect, just on his way. This is one of those fights, I think, trying to get himself into that conversation where it's like, there's a lot of people trying to break through. You have now been granted the opportunity to do it. Main event, veteran, let's go. I think the thing about it, physicality is the easiest way to beat Barbosa on the feet. Grappling is the easiest way to beat Barbosa, period. I don't know that Sadiq is ready to bang with Barbosa. Barbosa isn't there yet in his career. So you're still wading into the fire if you're trying to keep it standing and just throw with Barbosa.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then I'll say, I don't know that Sadiq is as lights out with his takedowns that he can necessarily rely on that. So with all this in mind, I think you're going to have a very multifaceted attack. You're going to have to go for some takedowns. You're going to have to get into the fire a little bit. And it's going to be difficult, but I do think he does have all the tools necessary to beat Barbosa. I think it's more about the execution. A lot of guys who have some of the more physical attributes or the grappling, you could get away with a little bit more because you're at a level you could bail yourself out of it. I think Sadiq has to be a little sharper than usual if he's going to get past a vet like Barbosa. That being said, I think he has all the weapons. For Barbosa, anytime he's out there, you know, anything could happen. He could take you out with the fist, the foot, the elbow, the shin, the knee. So you always got to be ready. And it's a good fight all the same. So it makes for a fun fight. What about you?
Yeah, for sure. Fun fight. You know, for old time's sake, I'm rooting to see a vintage Edson Barbosa performance. I think if his chin is strong enough, if it holds up, we can see that. But, you know, someone like Sadiq Youssef is looking to make a name off of a big win over a veteran who's had not only killer highlight reel, but big wins over big fighters. And didn't he fight for a title once? Or no, at the UFC? I can't remember. But anyway, yeah.
No, I think that just eluded him.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, close enough, right? I mean, he was one of those guys, he's still in there, in the game, in the mix, but has been reliably just like, oh, Barbosa's on the card? Yeah, I'm going to tune into that fight. So I'm rooting for him. Vintage Barbosa performance, spinning back kick, knockout, something crazy, flying knee. I'm just going to go with my heart here and say Barbosa KO round 3.
It's like that, huh?
It's like that. I'm just going to do it. Why not?
No, that's fair. That's fair. I'm going to go ahead and just have some more anarchy. I'm going to say Sadiq Youssef, unanimous decision.
Okay.
Yep. And that's all she wrote. Yeah. Natalie, next Saturday, UFC 294, Abu Dhabi, the rematch is a Makhachev against Charles Oliveira. Paulo Costa against Hamza Chimaev. Have you seen this going on with Costa on social media?
No, with his elbow?
Yes.
Yeah, what is going on there?
He said he had a surgery 3 weeks ago.
Well, that makes sense to fight.
Okay, I'll be real with you.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little gamesmanship.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't think I buy it. I just don't think I buy it. I think they went wild with the makeup and they, you know, put some stuff on it, made it red. I don't think it's real. Or yeah, man. Yeah. I'll say this, Abu Dhabi is the place where TJ Dillashaw had one arm and that was it. I don't know. I'll say this.
Yeah.
If Paulo Costa goes out there with one arm, 25 seconds submission, Hamza Chimaev. I'm going to give my prediction right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I think you're right. Honestly, it didn't occur to me because I just sort of glanced at the picture real fast. But after what he did to Tracy Cortez with that picture, you know, clearly, and not that we needed that to know that he's a prankster and a troll, but like there's nothing he won't do on the internet. So yeah, you might be right. It might be fake.
Yeah, that's just the only one I think it could be. But yeah, it's just I don't know. I mean, I'll be real with you. There's a lot on having that as a doubleheader. If you tell me Costa is just hell or high water, I'm too deep now to pull out. Nope. Don't want it. I don't know. We'll talk about it. I think we'll figure it out. I think he'll have to spill the beans because UFC doesn't want to be in out of luck. But guys, thank you so much for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week with more breakdowns, more news. Until then, have a good one.